Good morning. This is the Wednesday Morning Zine on KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder. Paleozoology is the branch of zoology dealing with the recovery and identification of animal remains from geological or archaeological contexts and the use of these remains in the reconstruction of prehistoric environments. Used in conjunction with archaeological findings, paleozoology can be very useful in determining the role of animals as a food and material resource in ancient societies, but the science can also address a wide range of modern issues, such as human food systems, wildlife conservation, and climate change. Joining me this morning on the phone is Steve Wolverton. He's Associate Professor in Archaeology in the Department of Geography at the University of North Texas, where he teaches a variety of archaeology, conservation, and geography courses. He'll present a lecture titled Wildlife Conservation and Environmental Archaeology on Thursday, tomorrow, July 24th, at the Crow Canyon Archaeological Center at 7 p.m. as part of the Four Corners Lecture Series. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Well, let's just start off. You know, I introduced this as we're talking about paleozoology. We're also talking a little bit about zoo archaeology today and wildlife conservation. How do these things all kind of fit together as it relates to the kind of research that you do, Steve?
Well, that's a big question. My training is in archaeology originally, and then I kind of branched into environmental science as well. So there just are many opportunities to think about the issues we face environmentally as an archaeologist that really broaden the subject matter. For example, when we talk about sustainability, this is a big buzzword in conservation circles right now and in environmental science, and it's very important because it entails thinking about the future, thinking about using resources now so that there will be enough resources at the same level for future generations of people. Well, that entails time, and we have a record of human resource use going back into deep time from archaeology, and so that offers us a window to look at change, right, and issues of sustainability, if not sustainability, over time.
So your latest research is involving some studies that you did along, I think it was three different stream beds in Texas, and how plastic litter is being distributed in those areas. Can you describe a little bit about what that research is about and what kinds of questions you're trying to answer through that research?
Sure. There are many ways to get at this, right? So most of the work that I do is in what's called zoo archaeology or the archaeology of animal remains. But really, I'm an archaeologist trained in anthropology first. And so what that means is I think about the world archaeologically. And so this really goes along with some of what was called the Garbology Project down at the University of Arizona back in the 70s and 80s by a guy named William Rathje and another guy named Michael Schiffer, who were professors there. And they were interested in looking at garbage to try to figure out whether or not they could get accurate representations from material culture of how people eat, how they behave, what they do during the day, etc. And so I read a book, I guess, in the summer of 2011 or 12, I can't remember when, on the expedition of the Plastiki, which is a raft that was built out of plastic bottles and plastic parts to sail across the Pacific Ocean, to go across the ocean gyre, where there's all this mired soup of small particulate plastic that has broken down in the ocean. And being in a geography department, having a degree in environmental science, I think about the connectivity of all these Earth ecosystems, and I think about the hydrological system a lot, but I also think about material culture because I'm an archaeologist. And so I kept thinking for years, even, as I'd hear about these ocean gyres, yeah, the problem is there. We got this big cesspool of junk in the ocean. But the real problem is at the input point of where that that problem starts, and that's with people's behavior. And littering is a behavior. And what we have on the landscape then is basically archaeology, just like the Garbology Project, where you've got stuff that people discarded. And there's a whole series of archaeological frameworks for trying to figure out more closely what are the behaviors that lead to those kinds of discard events. And if we could use archaeology and the thinking like an archaeologist to target some of those for different parts of streams, we might be able to come closer to more better aligned or better designed policy to aid in either cleaning up those streams or preventing littering in the first place. So that was the idea there.
If you're just tuning in, this is the Wednesday Morning Zine on KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder. This morning, my guest is Steve Wolverton. He's an associate professor in archaeology at the University of North Texas. We're talking about some of the research he's been doing around plastic in stream beds in Texas. Steve, one thing that strikes me is that most people think about archaeology and they don't think about maybe their role in modern, you know, societies, modern culture, and how we're contributing to this sort of like constant record of stuff that's being put out onto the landscape. Do you find that people are kind of resistant to think of that as archaeology because it's so modern and it's not some ancient society that people are maybe more used to thinking about in terms of archaeology?
It's really interesting. So the student who I did this research with, his name is Evan Carpenter, and I want to mention his name because he did almost all the field work on this, and his thesis has been finished and completed and will be published through the University of North Texas later this summer. And his work started from a position of coming from sociology and interest in environmental science. And so he kind of was suspicious, just like you were mentioning, of using an archaeological framework when he started. And it was foreign to him to think in terms of material culture and adding to the growing archaeological record as modern or contemporary people. But once he started to get into the archaeological literature and think about this framework, and then he started to get out into these streams and sample plastics and other types of litter that were being deposited there, it was really interesting because he would notice over the months that he would sample, particular kinds of litter would be deposited in very precise locations near streams in very subtle ways. So, for example, he had one roadside site that he was looking at along a stream where the same Sutter Home small wine bottles would show up almost every month. So he thought maybe somebody was driving by and tossing them out the window, right? So that stuff just gets integrated into these streams, and those streams lead into reservoirs, and they definitely get deposited into sediments and become artifacts buried. It's the same thing. It's just us doing it now.
You've studied a lot of different species, sort of putting your hat as a zoo archaeologist back on. You've studied white-tailed deer, black bears, freshwater mussels. Looking through some of the materials that you sent me to prepare for the interview, I was really struck at the differences in types of animals that you're looking at. How do you decide which species is going to address the kinds of research questions that you have?
It's interesting. You have to look for, you have to recognize sort of a social or environmental issue, and then you have to recognize whether or not there's an opportunity to bring something to the table archaeologically or paleontologically that might benefit solving some problems today. And those two things kind of, with good fortune, have to converge. So, for example, with the white-tailed deer research that I did, white-tailed deer are overcrowding neighborhoods near Austin and San Marcos, Texas, and there's lots of deer, right? And they're small because they eat everything down to a nub, and there's such a high population density that their growth rate is really, really small, really, really, they don't grow very large. And as a result, you get these very unhealthy deer populations or deer individuals in populations. And then you have people in neighborhoods who don't necessarily want to have the deer culled because that's cruelty to animals. But then you get other people who are annoyed and they want them removed. So it becomes this big social problem. Well, one of the things that we did was we went back and we looked for skeletal samples from the paleontological and archaeological samples record from the last 10,000 years. And what we wanted to do is we wanted to see, okay, we know we've got these crowded deer populations, and we think that they're small. They're certainly small deer compared to other deer in North America. How do they size up compared to deer here in Texas, you know, during the last 10,000 years? And it turned out they were very small compared to prehistoric deer. So one of the neat things we were able to do, talking with some of these city managers and so forth, was we were able to come to them and say, your deer are as small or smaller than deer have ever been in the last 10,000 years in this region. And all of a sudden, that changed their perspective because there was this kind of, it's kind of a little bit unfair to cast it this way, but they were looking at it and thinking, well, perhaps what we're doing is now unnatural, and we can see that better because we have this deep temporal record to contrast ourselves to. And so then maybe they're more open to different kinds of management approaches, such as trapping or culling.
If you're just tuning in, this is the Wednesday Morning Zine on KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder. This morning I'm talking with Steve Wolverton. He's an associate professor in archaeology at the University of North Texas. He's going to be presenting a lecture at Crow Canyon Archaeological Center tomorrow, Thursday, July 24th, titled Wildlife Conservation and Environmental Archaeology at 7 p.m. as part of the Four Corners Lecture Series. We're going to take a quick break here on the Zine, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. We are back. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Zine on KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder. This morning I'm talking with Steve Wolverton. He's an associate professor in archaeology at the University of North Texas. And we're talking a little bit this morning about some of the research he's done and some of the applications of the research that he's done on some modern problems. And Steve, one of the things that really strikes me about some of the things you're saying is this connection between what we call archaeology and what most people really associate with ancient societies and maybe the pyramids in Egypt or, the cliff dwellings we see here in our area at Mesa Verde, but you're really connecting it to contemporary issues and problems that we're facing now. Can you talk a little bit more about that and some of the ways that we can use archaeology to really deal with issues that we see right here in our modern day societies?
Yeah, to me, it's really interesting. I run into this situation a lot, or at least enough that I recognize it. Archaeology is really a broad discipline in the sense that we're solving problems with very many types of data that are often kind of problematic data, poorly preserved, or maybe collected in different ways, or definitely diverse in the sense you might be looking at plant remains, you might be looking at animal remains, you might be looking at stone tools, but the goal is to understand a story of the past. Well, that's a really broad suite of problem-solving skills, and so many of those skills are very transferable to thinking about multivariate or very complex environmental problems where there are so many things converging, but the one common element, again, or a common element anyway, is human behavior. So archaeologists are very good at thinking about human-environmental interactions for those reasons. And so that's kind of why all of these different conservation problems and research topics are of such keen interest to people like me.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the work you've done around freshwater mussels then, because I think that's another really good example of what you're talking about.
Yeah, in North Texas or anywhere else in North America, freshwater mussels, a lot of people think that they're clams, but they're not. They're their own family of invertebrates, and they're bivalves. They have two shells that pair together, and they occur in many, many streams. And North America is very rich in terms of the number of species of freshwater mussels. And they're very non-charismatic. I mean, they're the opposite of white-tailed deer and black bear and Bengal
not
tigers.
Not cuddly.
They're just really in slow-moving, sedentary, small, and unobtrusive, and kind of, for many people, probably boring. But from the point of view of a stream ecologist or a conservationist or somebody working with hydrology, they're extremely fascinating. And that's because they do lots of things for us in terms of record-keeping. Number one, they are filter feeders. So anything that's in the water, they're exposed to, right? And if the water's really, really polluted, they'll close their shells and stop feeding. So we can tell whether or not there's a healthy stream system based on a lot of their very small behavioral attributes, or whether or not they're even mussels in the stream in the first place. The second thing in terms of the work that I do is that they build these really robust shell remains, and they're pretty easy to identify, unlike a vertebrate carcass of like a deer or a bison, which has many different types of bones, and you have to identify each one of them as fragmentary remains when you're a zoo archaeologist. You might get fragmented remains of freshwater mussel shells, but there's a few identifiable parts. They're usually really robust, and they're pretty distinctive to species, and these species have different characteristics. Some of them prefer certain types of water bodies. Some of them are more pollution tolerant. Some of them are more high water temperature tolerant than others. So you can start to use these to talk about conditions in streams, right? So That's kind of the approach we've used. We've looked back in the Upper Trinity River Basin of North Texas, near the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and we've looked at, okay, if you look at the modern community of freshwater mussels in the system, what does it look like? And then if you look back a couple thousand years, well, what species were here, and is it any different?
This is the Wednesday Morning Zine on KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder, and this morning my guest is Steve Wolverton, Associate Professor in Archaeology at the University of North Texas. We're talking about some of his research that he's done as a zooarchaeologist and just in archaeology in general. Steve, you've described in your writings how ethnobiology and maybe this idea of archaeology can help bridge between environmental sciences and environmental ethics. Can you describe what you mean by that?
Yeah, it really goes down, gets down to what are the kinds of data that we work with as people who work with paleo data or old data, data that covers long periods of time. And for me, what really challenges scientists and other types of researchers in terms of ethics is that much of what we do, for example, littering of plastic or polluting in waters that influence mussels or removing predators from an ecosystem and having lots of white-tailed deer, all these examples we've talked about today, those are very immediate things in an ecosystem. We can control those decisions. Management itself is a very short time frame exercise. It's in the scale of a human lifetime or shorter. So that's the scale of our action and our activity. That's the scale of our impact on the world. But really, it's not the scale of our impacts. Excuse me, that's the scale of our actions. The scale of our impacts might be much longer, but we can't see them. And so when we think on these bigger time scales, when we add archaeology to the picture and we start looking across time, we've shifted the whole scale of things, and we've removed ourselves from our everyday context. And from an ethical point of view, that's really good because it challenges our values, because our values really kind of tie to the time scales that we operate on. What do I need for dinner? Where am I going to get my groceries? How much money do I have in my bank account? How much does gasoline cost? These are very proximate things, and almost all of those have an environmental impact. Well, we need to see the temporal and the geographic aspects of those at bigger time scales than we realize. That kind of drops the bottom up for us a little bit and really challenges our values to think a little more long-term in terms of what we do.
And certainly gives archaeologists a much different take on some of the work that they might try to endeavor to do into the future. I'm wondering what's next for you, Steve. I mean, you're looking at a lot of different kinds of research angles, but there seems to be this kind of core idea behind your research that you really want it to have contemporary value. So, well, what's coming up next for you? I mean, what are you thinking about?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. I'm finishing up a lot of the mussel work that we're doing in North Texas. That's immediate impact. I've also started some research down in western Argentina. There we're doing the contemporary zoo archaeology of some traditional ranchers who are living on the escarpment of the Andes, and they create these wonderful middens full of bone, and it's often domesticated animals that they're butchering on site. And we're looking for evidence over decades of change to see how much of their meat is now coming from more contemporary butchers. The reason why we're looking at this is it's part of a bigger scale project where we're looking at lifeway change in a group of people who are really facing development, and not the encroachment, but exposure to and the impacts of exposure to contemporary market economies, whereas before, maybe for even the last 100 years or longer, they really had a subsistence lifeway. So their lives are changing, and we're trying to gauge the impact of that and record their lifeways, and zooarchaeology is one way we can take a look at that.
Wow, I can think already of a lot of different applications for that kind of research in terms of markets and things. Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining me this morning and talking about your research. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. I look forward to my talk tomorrow night.
All right. That's Steve Wolverton. He's Associate Professor in Archaeology at University of North Texas. He will be presenting a lecture titled Wildlife Conservation and Environmental Archaeology tomorrow, Thursday, July 24th, at the Crow Canyon Archaeological Center at 7 p.m. as part of the Four Corners Lecture Series. You've been listening to The Zine on KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder.